Someone needs to put Sadeus down, Kaladin thought, sipping his drink, swishing the cool liquid in his mouth. He's as bad as Amram. Tried to get me and mine killed repeatedly. Don't I have a reason, even right, to return the favor? Kaladin was learning how to do what the assassin did, how to run up walls, maybe reach windows that were thought inaccessible. He could visit Sadeus' camp in the night, glowing, violent. Kaladin could bring justice to this world.
Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for Chapter 46, Patriots. If you haven't got there in your reading yet, I would suggest going back and making sure you have. If you've picked the wrong episode by accident, maybe make sure that you are on the right episode. You definitely don't want to be left out of the fun. And if you're exactly where you're supposed to be, enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and I invited him over to eat chuda. But he brought all of his cousins. It's Jack. What's up?
Oh, hello. It's so crunchy. Yeah. This chuta.
The deep fried Kremlin claws. Yeah. Mm.
Can I have a toothpick?
Mm. Did you bring all your cousins to this recording or?
I brought 8 of them. I didn't bring all of them.
Bridge 4.
Bridge 4, yeah.
I can just see Lopin being like, hey, listen, if Kaladin, the guy with the scar still on his forehead, the guy that looks really cool, if he sees you guys and is all like, what the hell are you guys doing here? All you got to do is go, Bridge 4, and then he'll be cool with it.
I think it's their answer for everything with these cousins. They're just like, Bridge 4. That's it. It's just, that's it. It just explains everything in
so
life.
So that's 3 extra people them. Bridge 4 has now that are all Lopin's cousins.
It might even become official cousin speak.
Maybe really maybe Bridge 4, maybe cousin. They'll have a sub crew that's just all Lopin's cousins. Bridge Lopin.
I love Lopin. Oh,
he's
my
so
gosh.
Great, isn't he?
You know what? And I was hoping for a big win in this chapter. So this chapter is number 4. This is 46 that we're on, folks.
Yeah.
Sprint heads. We are on Patriots today,
mm-hmm.
And there is a drinking game going on, but it doesn't really. I was hoping for Lopin. I'm like, okay, this is going to be where the focus
yeah.
that he said he has. He's like, I have focus.
I
thought, oh, and so what I had imagined during that whole scene was like, okay, so here's the Horn Eater. He's slamming them back.
Right.
He's telling this wonderful story.
It's amazing.
Like the background,
yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It just blew my mind. So he's telling this wonderful tale, slamming back the ales, which he reluctantly didn't want to drink because he wanted real Horn Eater ale, but
Horn Eater lager,
the mugs.
Yeah.
sir, we would stock that, only it was melting our mugs. So yeah, we don't serve that because, yeah.
Horn Eater Lager is like alien blood, and it just literally melts through the ship and causes like crisis.
It's like, oh shit, somebody spilt the Horn Eater ale.
It's going to go through the world. It's going to just melt through Roshar into Shadesmar.
Through the world. My God.
Yeah. How do you win a drinking contest against a guy who literally drinks rubbing alcohol for, you know what I mean?
I'll tell you how. What my brain was doing as I was reading this is I was thinking, okay, this is going to be so cool. It's going to be this, you know, it's already a long chapter, which is why we're just covering the one today.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, this is a moment where, you know, Rock is going to be slamming them back.
Yeah.
And Lopin is just going to be taking his time. And then by the end of the night, the Horn Eater probably would be distracted by this or that, other conversations. Maybe he got up dancing. Maybe he went over gambling, whatever. And then who's at the table focused but steady was Lopin. And then when the Horn Eater got back to the table at the end of the night, Lopin had more glasses Right. Downed. And I thought it was going to be that, right, but it wasn't. But anyway.
Yeah, you can almost see Lopin coming up with some kind of trick in order to beat Rock. You know what I mean? Like, because he's very tricky, this guy. Like, he's very...
Is he tricky? I don't know. Like, I guess maybe he is. I was just thinking that he was more like, I can do this, and I'm going to win over the Horneater because I have focus.
Right, right. I'll just keep drinking while he goes and talks to people, and I'll just keep drinking.
And that's what I thought it was going to be, but it wasn't, but that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, so Patriots, so we get this little bit from Words of Radiance at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
More questions, I suppose, than answers, but... We get some more interesting things. When Simmel was informed of the arrival of the Edge Dancers, a concealed consternation and terror, as is common in such cases, fell upon him. Although they were not the most demanding of orders, their graceful, limber movements hid a deadliness that was by this time quite renowned. Also, they were the most articulate and refined of the Radiants.
Yeah, so
I couldn't help but think of Yasna Kolin for this.
Really, eh?
Well, articulate and refined.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's her.
We don't know. I don't think Yasna told us what order she belonged to, or she thought she would have belonged to back while she was still alive. So we don't really know which one it is.
Yeah.
But each of these little blurbs are kind of highlighting another... Radiant Order, telling us a little bit about
these Edge Dancers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like how it says their limber movement hide deadliness. So like they look graceful, but they're deadly too. Like that's really cool.
I couldn't help but think of the Blade Singers in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, yeah.
The Blade Singer elves. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they move with such nice grace that it kind of distracts you like away from their deadliness.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing too here is that I just wanted to point out that that the next novella, the first novella that we're going to be covering after Words of Radiance is called Edge Dancer.
It's called Edge Dancer, yeah.
So,
I know.
Just to give you a little...
It's pretty cool.
A little winky-do there.
A little winky-do of what's to come?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay, so Kaladin is reaching an end of a line of bridgemen. He's doing an inspection, or I guess a checkup, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The men are standing at attention, their eyes are forward. The transformation, it says here in the text, was marvelous. Impressive, he says to the sergeant, whose name is Pitt.
Mm-hmm. That's Brad Pitt, remember?
Brad says to Pitt, this is Bridge 17. I've rarely seen such a fine platoon of spearmen. I fell for this hook, line, and sinker. First time I read it, I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. Bridge 17.
Cool, yeah.
And then the next line, Sanderson just, I love how Sanderson, in just a few sentences, leads you along, and then bam.
Yep.
The next sentence is, it was the kind of lie that commanders learned to give. I love this so much.
Mm-hmm.
Kaladin didn't mention how some of the bridgemen shuffled while they stood, or how their maneuvers and formation were sloppy. They had begun to take pride in their uniforms, though, with their identity. They were ready to patrol, and he'd made a mental note to get Teft to start taking them out in rotation with other crews that were ready. So I just think it's interesting that he's saying that to Pitt. He does see improvement.
Mm-hmm, for sure. He deems them ready enough to do patrol.
So
that's good.
Yeah. That's good.
They're not Bridge 4, but they're...
Right.
He wants them to make them feel like they're Bridge 4.
He's giving them positive reinforcement, even though he still sees much room for improvement.
Right.
So, Kaladin was proud of them, he says. Bridge 17 considered their nightly bean curry to be part of their identity now. So this, I thought this was cute.
It's really cool.
So it appears that the choice for
the kind of
food is kind of becoming a thing for
Bridge 4 has like a Horneater stew, and Bridge 17, these guys are 17, yeah, Bridge 17 has this curry. He says, he was like, individuality through meal choice.
Okay, if you had to pick between bean curry or the Horneater stew, Which one would you go for?
I don't know. They've made the Horn Eater Stew sound amazing because these guys literally bonded and became men again over the stew. So it's like a mythical thing, this Horn Eater Stew. But I do love a curry, so that's a really tough one.
Right.
Yeah, even if it's a bean curry.
I don't know. I think I would probably want both, I suppose.
Why not? Why can't you have both?
The curry just sounds too good. The curry sounds too good. I love curry so much.
Yeah,
so.
Same.
Okay. Pardon me. Okay, so that's really cool. That's becoming a part of their individuality, and Kaladin is amused by this.
Yeah.
I think that's cool too. But he had three more crews to check on. So he proceeds to go to 18, which has problems.
Oh, man, I feel... You know what? He should have said to Bridge 17, you guys
at least
are
you're
impressive.
Not 18.
At least you're not 18. 18's like right next door, and they're like, aw, we suck. Yeah.
So the sergeant here, I think his name is Vet, and he's just not a particularly good officer. He's not very commanding.
No.
He's actually prone to begging instead of commanding, which is kind of awkward. He just doesn't have command of the men. And the men are just kind of, they're not really together. They're
discordant.
There's
no laughter. There's no camaraderie.
Right. They've splintered into little cliques. So it's total high school. It says here they've splintered into little cliques. So they're all sitting in the cafeteria.
Right. There's the geeks and the goths and the metalheads and the jocks and stuff. Yeah.
The geeks, the dweebs, they all love him.
Yeah, they love him. He's begging them, "Hey, can you guys come play D&D with me?" And we're like, that's us. We were the dweebs and geeks.
What they need is a Ferris Bueller to unite them.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Unite them. That's maybe what Dalinar means. Unite the cliques.
Yeah. Just needs Ferris. Okay. So that's interesting. So Kaladin does speak to Bridge 18 on motivation and unity for a time. And he thinks, I'm going to have to do another training session with them in the chasms.
Right.
So he does think that. But if that didn't work, he'd have to break them up and put them into separate... So what else can you do?
Which is a smart option, right? If you have something that's working in like four other crews, you break up this one crew, and then maybe those individual men that get sent to those crews will get out of their funk because they're surrounded by...
habits.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
They're surrounded by laughter and camaraderie and all that stuff.
Just want to note here, the next little paragraph says, he eventually left 18, shaking his head. They didn't seem to want to be soldiers.
Yeah.
So why had they taken Dalinar's offer then? And then he thinks, because they don't want to make choices anymore.
Right.
Choices can be hard. And he was thinking that he has caught himself. He has been that person. He's staring at a blank wall.
Right.
Too morose to even get up and kill himself. So
he's been in that position before.
Yeah. Yeah, he gets it.
And just because it's taken these men a little longer to get out of the funk doesn't mean that their pain isn't, important and stuff. He's like, I felt that before. I get it.
He's on to Bridge 19 and Syl is floating past on a current as a small form of mist, a small patch of mist, it says here.
Mm-hmm.
And Syl says, everyone else is eating their dinners. And Kaladin's like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Good. No, she says, that wasn't a status report, Kaladin. It was a point of contention. Contention? She's like, everyone else is eating their dinners.
Right,
like,
right.
Why aren't you, is what she didn't say.
Yeah, exactly.
You're working, says Syl, still. Yeah, I need to get these men ready. You know something is coming. Those countdowns on the walls, have you seen more of those red spren? Yes, she admitted. I think so. At least, in the corners of my eyes, watching me, very infrequently, but they're there. Something is coming, Kaladin says. That countdown points right towards the weeping. Whatever happens then, I'll have the bridgemen ready to weather it. Well, you won't if you drop dead from exhaustion first, says Syl. People really can do that, right? I heard Teft saying that... It felt like he was going to do so.
I like this because she's using like a metaphor, but doesn't know if it's a real metaphor or not. Like, people can do that, right? Did I use that properly?
People can do that, right?
Did I just do that right?
Yeah. Can you actually drop dead from exhaustion?
Yeah.
I don't know, Kaladin says, but I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
Tef likes to exaggerate, says Kaladin. It's one mark of a good sergeant. And that last part was a joke? Yes. Ah, she says, rest anyway, Kaladin, please.
Kaladin heads about him.
She's totally worried about him. He keeps working. I mean, while everyone else is eating, what's he doing? Checking up on all these, all these.
We know that she's worried about him for other reasons too. You're like Syl right now. Yeah. You're worried about him as well, about where he's headed, what road he's down, and she's worried about him too. And she's like, just take some time and chill, like have something to eat and just relax, you know.
Well, what's nice about this is that she does manage to convince him. He has a few more to check on, but he decides that he'll head back to Bridge Four's barracks. He can always check on the other platoons tomorrow. And he can hear Rock's laughter echoing in the night as he approaches. So he turns and hikes back. And he arrives at the familiar scent of Rock's stew. And there's Hobber sitting on a tall stump that the men had fashioned for him. And he's this is interesting. So there's a blanket across his gray, useless legs.
Right,
because remember Hobber that was wounded.
Right, with a Zeth attack.
On that bridge run. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zeth
attack.
He's the one who got cut by Zeth. That's why his legs don't work anymore.
Oh, I thought Hobber was that one who was injured right at the beginning in Way of Kings.
He was injured at Way of Kings. They rehabbed him. He was able to become part of the bridge crews again, part of Bridge Four. He was on guard duty and got hurt again.
It's the same guy. Yeah, okay. So same guy. Okay. Right. I didn't quite link that. Okay. Mm.
It's the second time that he's had to try to recuperate from. And there's, you know, unless you are potentially a Knight Radiant, there's no way of recuperating it. Like, Cal was able to do the impossible, but Hobber is not that kind of guy. He's just a regular dude. It's kind of nice, actually. I kind of like how they're showing us the difference here, because Cal is able to bounce back from something like that, but this guy can't. Yeah. And he's like what we would be. We're just a regular guy, and he's not able to do amazing things.
Cal hasn't shown his adamantine claws yet, right?
He has not.
Okay. So, but Rock has Hobber serving, and he's standing nearby. So, like, you know, I think it's just cool that Rock is, you know, Hobber has, you know, lost the use of his legs, but he's very useful. So he's taking part in serving out the stew.
He's still doing something. He's got useless legs. Yeah. He can't do anything, but he's still being part of the crew.
Yeah.
Which is really
cool. Part of the crew.
Yeah.
It's really great. It's awesome. Renarin was there taking and washing the dishes.
Yeah, dude.
We have a
light-eyed prince. He's like
prince,
you know,
washing
fourth in line. Yeah, so there's King Elokar. There's King Elokar, King Elokar's son.
Yeah.
Then it would be Dalinar.
Well, it says it wouldn't go to him, but
and Renarin. So Renarin's fifth in line to the throne.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I got to start throwing in an occasional Adolin here for a werewolf.
Werewolf Will instead of Adolin. Adolin.
Gotta start going A.
I'll just start saying Aladdin. I'll just say it completely wrong again.
Aladon. Okay. So he didn't display any of the spoiled temperament of his brother, Adolin. Though he had insisted on joining them, he often sat at the edges of the group near the back of the bridgemen at night. Such an odd young man.
Right.
Odd. There's that odd. Yeah. Hmm.
Odd
young man. But I think it's so cool that Renarin is here. I think it's awesome that he's wanting to participate and be a part of this thing.
Yeah.
And him washing the dishes, dude, this is great.
It's great, man. It's like washing.
It's great.
It's like washing of the feet. Like, it's like you, there's nothing so low that you're not willing to do it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Kaladin reaches for some stew and then he froze. Sitting on a log nearby were three beefy, thick-armed Herdasians. All wore Bridge Four uniforms, and he only recognized one of them, which was Punio. Kaladin finds Lopin nearby, staring at his hand as in a fist, and Kaladin says, three? Cousins, Lopin replies. You have too many of those. That's impossible. Rod, Huio, say hello.
Bridge Four!
Bridge Four!
They raise up their mugs
or
their bowls of stew. He peeks, so Kaladin gets him stew. He peeks into the storage room and he finds Shen stacking Talu grain in here. This is a really cool moment.
This might be my highlight. This might be my highlight.
It is definitely one of my highlights, but I got to admit, I'm like, later? Later?
Yeah.
What do you mean later?
He's about to say something
later,
and then Moash interrupts him.
I know. It was like a big deal. I'm like, I want this so bad.
What do you, okay, before we get to it then, tell me, what do you think, what do you think he was going to say?
Let's arrive at the moment first,
okay.
and then maybe I'll throw out some.
Okay.
So Kaladin says, Shin, the Parshman continued stacking. I thought this was interesting. Mm-hmm. He can't break out of this mode, this form.
Right.
It's like a program.
Yeah, he's like,
and you're just doing
gotta do
it.
Mundane,
you're working,
dull form style stuff. Yeah,
I've been told to do this. So even though someone says Shen, someone's saying your name,
right?
That's meaningless. Now, if someone says a new order to do, then that's different,
right?
But if you just say my name, okay,
that doesn't change anything.
That doesn't change anything.
No.
Doesn't change that I'm stacking these bags of Talu grain.
Mm-hmm.
So Kaladin has to give an order, and he says, "Fall in and attention."
Yeah,
and then Shen froze, like, "Oh, I've been given a new order." Okay,
right.
And then he snaps too. Right,
right.
At ease, soldier. Kaladin says, "I spoke to Dalinar Colin earlier today and asked if I could arm you. He asked if I trusted you, and I told him the truth." Now, I have to admit, when I was first reading this, I didn't know what the next sentence was going to be.
Right.
I wasn't sure. It was a marvelous little moment as I was reading it. And then Kaladin holds out his hand with the spear in it to the Parshman, and he says, "I do."
Did they just get married?
Giving him the spear. What's that?
Did they just get married? I do.
I do.
when you hand a Parshman a spear, that's literally getting married on Roshar.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. I do. And then it would surprise Kaladin that Shen just grabs his arm and link and says, great.
They get onto a chull, and there's a sign behind the chull that says, just married, with like cans and stuff. Yeah. And then they just go right off into the sunset.
I was trying to think of like a Roshar, the equivalent of a can. I'm
shells
on my feet.
Like little shells or something.
Little rock buds. Dried rock buds dragging by. Bridge 4 doesn't have slaves, Kaladin says. I'm sorry for being frightened before. He urges the man to take the spear, and Shen finally does. Kaladin continues and says, Leighton and Natam practice in the mornings with a few men. They're willing to help you learn so that you don't have to train with the green vines. Shen holds the spear with reverence.
Yeah.
Shen says, sir, Kaladin pauses, you are a good man. I've spent my life being judged for my eyes, Shen. I won't do something similar to you because of your skin. Sir, he begins.
Yeah.
Moash's voice can be heard from outside. Kaladin.
Fucking Moash. Seriously?
Was there something? I know. Was there something you want to say, Kaladin says to Shen? Later, the Parshman says. Later.
So?
I'm like, no, I don't want later.
I want now.
I want to flip through the book. Yeah, I want to flip through the book, find the place where it continues, and read that.
I want Kaladin to say, Moash, fuck off for 1 second. Your conspiracies and assassination attempts can wait 1 second. I'm talking to my friend Shen here.
So what did I think?
Yeah, what do you think?
What do I think is possible here? Well, I guess a whole bunch of things are flooding through my brain. I'm wondering if Shen is a spy. I'm wondering if he's truly in form, or if it's that he is in form for a purpose.
Right.
I'm wondering if he's going to pick up the sphere and fall in line with the others and learn to fight with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if something else is going to happen. I don't know.
He seems to respect Kaladin. Like
You are a good man. Yeah.
Right.
So I'm hoping that all of that is just as it is.
Right.
And so he acknowledges this, I guess, Kaladin. It seems to all point back to honor. That Kaladin's an honorable man.
Right.
Right? So I think that Shen is wanting to share information that he has about the nature of the Parshendi and perhaps with regards to what is coming.
Right. Shen is a parshman, right? He's like one of the right. dull form I know, slaves.
But he's
may
in a dull
not
form,
know
right?
anything about the the Parshendi, even though we know that they're connected. The other here, I'm going to give you a kind of like maybe an alternate thing to think about.
Sure.
It could be that Shen wants to bring up the fact that they're literally hanging Parshendi carcasses up in their barracks as trophies. And maybe he's like, sir, you're a good man, but can we take that shit down? It's making me fucking weirded out. Remember we talked right. about how they have the carapace is kind of hanging?
Yeah.
So maybe he's like,
grotesque.
Maybe he's like, dude, you know, if you're going to give me a spear and you want to say, you know, you're not judging me by my skin, maybe you could take that stuff down. It's kind of gross.
But. Yeah.
I'm just throwing that out there because it's something we've already
No, that's
about,
a so. Very... I don't think often on that that's still going on. I like to think that that's not going on in Dalinar's camps.
Well, this is sure. this is one of Dalinar's camps, right? This is the Bridge 4 camp.
I know, but are they really doing that even
I
now?
I mean, we know that the camp was already set up and that was one of the things they did.
Yeah.
They hung these carapace armors as a way to, you know, as something to remember that we did this and we were able to be victorious right. because of the thing, the ingenuity that we had. You know, by mutilating our enemy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just like picking on it because it's kind of gross.
It is grody.
Yeah. But I like that.
Maybe
I like
it's
your,
just that. I don't know.
I think theory there about Shen. I like that. That's nice.
Well, I mean, it would be interesting if Shen was more than just the servant, that maybe he was placed or just possesses...
Possesses some knowledge
that he may not be able to share in that form.
Right.
I don't know.
Because doll form Anyways. Stops him from being able to think clearly. Like he's
prevents
like,
him.
It's almost like how Syl and Pattern, when they first came to Roshar, they're like, I should know this, but I don't. I just don't know it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I like that, actually.
I don't know. I mean, it would be... I think... It's going to be a whatever it is, it's going to be a surprise for me.
Cool.
Because I really don't know, and I'm very excited.
Yeah.
So Kaladin does turn his attention back to Moash. Kaladin, come on, we're going out, and you've got to come with us. Even Rock is coming. Mm-hmm. Ha, Stu is in good hands, Rock says. I will go do this thing. Will be good to get away from stink of little Bridgman. Hey, says Drahi. Ah, and stink of Bridgman.
Of big
and
Bridgman,
stink of
too.
Big Bridgman, too, yeah. Yeah. Moash says, come on, to Kaladin. You promised. He'd done no such thing. He just wanted to settle down and be by the fire, eat his stew, and watch the flames burn. I love how Kaladin's, I guess, his ideal rest is just so simple and perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just wants to eat, be by the fire, you know? Like,
it sounds amazing.
It's great.
I just want to eat and sit by a fire, too.
Yeah. I don't want to go to some loud bar.
Yeah. I mean, I like going to loud bars, too, but I also really like sitting around and watching flames spread, or just the flames. There's no flames spread in our world.
Yeah. I, says Kaladin, fine, let's go. Yeah. They cheer and clap, and then he notes here, they're cheering and clapping to see their commander going drinking?
Yeah.
Hmm. You know, Kaladin says under his breath to Syl, if this had been any one of my old spearmen crews, I'd assume they wanted me out of the camp so they could get away with something while I'm gone.
Yeah, I like that.
And she says, I doubt it's that. No, Kaladin says, these men just want to see me as human. I put a little note here because I wonder if Kaladin sees himself as human.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
is he just human?
I think that they're talking
this,
about
this
it
is one of the
less in like a racially human and more in that he's been exalted because of the things that he can do.
Right.
Remember
right.
he says like Moash and Rock are really the only mm-hmm. people who see him as like a regular guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like everyone else has kind of been putting him on a pedestal. Yeah. I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if it's perhaps a bit more than that.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want them thinking of him as they would a light eyes. So he says, so that's why he's in part agreeing to go. Ha, says Rock, these men, they claim they can drink more than a horn eater. Air stick lowlanders. Is not possible. Kaladin says, a drinking contest? What am I getting into? Sigzil says, none of us are on duty until late morning. Sorry, he's like, I guess Sigzil is like justifying, you know, like that it's, yeah, like none of us are on duty till next morning. So why not come out? Teft was watching the Colons overnight along with Layton's team.
Yeah.
Lopin says, tonight I will be victorious. It is said you should never bet against a one-armed Herdazian in a drinking contest. It is? Moash asks. It will be said, Lopin continues. You should never bet against the one-armed Herdazian in a drinking contest.
Yeah, that's funny.
You weigh about as much as a starved axe hound, Lopin, Moash says skeptically. And then here we get my favorite line from him. Ah, but I have focus.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So they continue down a pathway into the market, and the market is very much alive. Mm-hmm. So on the other side, they're passing plenty of other barracks on the way, where ordinary soldiers are busy doing things that seem a little interesting. They're sharpening spears and oiling breastplates before their dinner came. And this is in Sadius's army, so it's interesting.
No, this is right? This is his. This is the Colon army.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, this is the. They're still in the Colon war.
It says
camps.
Here that they were busy in tasks that Kaladin had rarely seen. Oh, rarely seen in Sadius's army.
Right.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Like they're busy wrong. Still working, doing stuff in Sadius's army.
Okay,
they
that's
wouldn't
cool.
have been. Yeah.
See, I was thinking it was the opposite, that Sadius is preparing for something. But okay.
One of the things I like Kaladin's- here is that it kind of shows that some of the trauma that they've suffered on the plateau is starting to get better. That there's signs here that Dalinar's camp is starting to heal from its wounds.
You know, the next paragraph outlines that a little bit.
Yeah, I like this. I like this.
Kaladin's men weren't the only ones going out for the night. They strolled toward the market laughing. There were other soldiers doing the same. They were recovering slowly from the slaughter that had left Dalinar's army crippled. Yeah, you got to imagine, it must be really tough to like... Like, how many soldiers did he lose? Like, what percentage did he lose?
It was like 75% of his soldiers or something ridiculous. Like, we've already covered it. I just don't remember the exact numbers right now.
Yeah.
But it was a lot.
The market was aglow with life.
Well,
torches.
Hold on. Caveat to that. It was 75% of the men he took with him to the plateau because there was a bunch that he didn't
take with
him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Not his entire
force. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, this market that they're going through is aglow with life. Torches, oil lanterns, there's merchants showing off their wares. I like this, the criers that were selling the news.
Yeah, I like it
and
too.
And you had to pay them for that. I just love that so much. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, here, and if you want the story, well, give them a halfpenny or
it's
whatever.
Like they cry out the title of the story, but they'll tell you the whole in-depth part of it if you pay them. Yeah, which is great.
Right, it's so cool. It's one of my favorite little bits of world building.
And Sigzil's all over it. Sigzil's like, I'll be back. I'm going over there to get this information.
Well, what's this about a war in Yakov? There's a new emperor in Azir. Mm-hmm. Kaladin didn't even really know where that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sigzil jogs over to get an earful, paying the crier a sphere, while Lopin and Rock argued which tavern they were going to visit.
Yeah.
There were spice merchants. I thought that was a nice little nod maybe to Herbert, right?
Mm-hmm. A little bit of Dune.
A little bit of Dune in there, which we still have to talk about. But
yeah.
A light-eyed courier posting projected I love this bit, dude. So I had to highlight it. There's a light-eyed courier posting projected high storm dates and times on a board. Her husband is nearby, yawning, looking like he's just been dragged along.
Right.
Dude, I'd love that so much. It was so descriptive, like coming from the criers and the merchants and the lanterns and the torches and all of this. And then to get, I'm delighted in this.
Yeah, it's cool.
The weeping was coming soon, and the only break from this weeping that was coming was going to be light day, which was right in the middle of this weeping. But this year's weeping was off in this 1,000-day cycle of 2 years, which meant that the weeping would be calm. So it's foretold.
So it'll be a lighter weeping.
It's going to be a lighter. It's going to be a light weeping.
Yeah.
Enough arguing, Moash says. We're going to the ornery chull. Aw, says Rock, but they don't have horn eater loggers. Yeah. And that's because horn-eater loggers melt your mouth, Moash says.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's my pick anyway tonight. So Sigzil gets back from the news and he's carrying something that's steaming and wrapped in paper. And Kaladin's like, oh, Sigzil, not you too. It's good, Sigzil says. Then he takes a bite of the chuta.
You don't even know what it is.
Yeah, it is. And Sigzil's like, of course I do. Hey, Lopin, what's in this stuff? Flangria. Which is, Kaladin says, meat. What kind of meat? The meaty kind.
Yeah.
Soul cast, Kaladin says.
Right.
You ate soul cast food every night as a bridgeman, says Sigzil. Yeah, because I had no choice. Oh, look, he's frying that bread. You fry the Flangria too, Lopin says. Making little balls of it, mixed with ground lavis, batter it up and fry it, then stuff it in fried bread and pour on gravy. He's slicking his lips, saying this. Dude, yeah. This, I can't help but think, like, this is like, I don't know, this is like getting, you know, I don't know.
It's like a shawarma or like a doner or something, or like a...
I think it's almost like a, it's... It's like getting like, I don't know, it's worse than fish and chips. It's like fish and chips battered in more hot dogs and fish and chips.
It sounds amazing, actually. I think it sounds amazing.
Yeah, but the meaty meat that you don't know what it is, that sounds like a hot dog.
It does. It's meaty. It's the meaty kind.
Yeah. What gets me is the crunch. Actually, it's weird because the crunch is like disgusting, I think, to Kaladin, but that's the part, right. I love the most. It's cheaper than water, says Pete. That is funny. It's cheaper than water.
Yeah.
That's probably because even the grain is soul cast, Kaladin says. It will taste like mold, Rock. I'm disappointed in you. The horn eater looks sheepish, takes a bite. His chuta was crunching. Yeah. And Kaladin's like, shells? They're Kremlin claws. Rock grins. Deep fried.
Yeah.
I love the sound of that. It's like crispy onions or something in there. It's nice. Okay, so the horn eater takes a bite of these crunch shells, the Kremlin claws. That's really, really cool. As they're heading across this area, there's a few notes here about the structure of the streets. It says here that everything here was, of course, arranged so that as many doorways as possible could point away from the origin, and the origin is capitalized.
Yeah, the origin of the storms, right?
Right. Streets were designed so that they could run east to west and provide a way for the winds to blow. Warm orange light spilled out of the tavern that they're heading towards. This is the ornery chull, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's firelight because no tavern would use spheres for light because they might be too tempting for their intoxicated
patrons. Makes total sense.
We'll never find seats, says Kaladin. I like how he's just like, this is not going to work out.
He just got here and he's like, this sucks.
He's like... This sucks. I don't want to be here. Yeah. We're never going to find a seat. Rock says, of course we will find seat. We have a secret weapon.
Yeah.
Pointing to where Pete was heading towards a pretty dark-eyed woman polishing a glass, smiling as Pete comes up to her.
What do you think about all this here? We don't have to dwell on it too much, but what do you think about the fact that these men who are now free are free to encounter people that they love and they can get married and then have families. And then like Sigzil's like, have you thought about what you're going to do with the married men? And then he's like, holy shit. Cal's like, holy shit. Yeah. I never thought of that. I guess if Pete marries this girl that he likes and then has a family, they're going to have to live in our barracks. That can't work like that.
Yeah.
And then he thinks I'll have to ask Dalinar for more room if this starts happening more often.
That's right. Yeah. So that's what the next bit's about. So like, it's interesting that Kaladin hadn't thought about it, but again, it's another extension of having, you know, people under your care.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, they're not just soldiers that I need them to be. They're also husbands and brothers or, you know, and cousins.
Yeah. And cousins.
So I need extended family. Good gosh. If it goes to extended, he's going to have to.
Grandma's how much and land? Stuff.
He's going to have to build high rises that can stand the high storms because
it's funny,
there's no.
He didn't have to worry about this whenever they were just slaves and they were just a bridge crew because they didn't have the freedom to go and meet other people and to do this kind of thing. But this is what happens with freedom. These men are now free and that means they're free to have relationships outside of the crew. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Rock says this will break up the bridge crew. He's like worried that this thing would break up Bridge 4. It cannot be allowed.
Rock says it cannot be allowed. Yeah.
And then he's like, well, we'll have to find a way to make it work.
Well, married men tended to be better soldiers.
Right.
That's what Kaladin is noting. And you know, that's interesting. You know, it could be for a variety of reasons.
You got something to fight for, maybe.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Yeah.
I like it a lot. I really love this whole thing because it makes their freedom seem tangible and real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys were totally welcome to leave if you want. That's your freedom, but you chose to stay here. But there are other things that come with that freedom. You know?
Yeah.
Being Bridge 4 is their job, but they're allowed to have lives outside their job.
Right.
It's really, really cool.
Kaladin nods towards this woman whose name is it Ka?
Ka, yeah.
So Ka, she doesn't own the place, I assume. No, Ka's just a barmaid, says Rock. Pete is quite taken with her.
Yeah.
Well, we'll need to see if she can read.
I like
that,
too.
It'd be good to have someone around to do that. In a normal army, Kaladin would be light-eyed, and his wife or sister would act as the battalion's scribe and clerk.
Right.
I think it's funny that Kaladin's like just met Ka.
Right.
Okay. He's just had this conversation with Sigzil about the wives and about extended family. So now he's chewing on that. But as soon as he meets Ka, you know, he's not really necessarily noting her beauty or thinking about anything else other than, I wonder if she can read.
Right. Can we use her?
Right. Now, it's not that he's being, you know, disingenuous or anything like that. It's just Kaladin is just at the forefront of what he needs to do, which is why I'm very surprised with the way he handled the interaction with Moash and the others.
A little later.
So,
yeah. Yeah, because currently Sigzil's the one who's taking care of all their paperwork stuff. Because he can read and write.
He can,
But in Alethi society, he shouldn't. So it's nice to be able to have, maybe some of these men will marry women who can be scribes for the company, right? Yeah,
yeah, that's important. So Ka could be a thing in the future with Pete. That's really cool.
She totally could, yeah.
Kaladin settles himself back against the wall where he wouldn't be silhouetted again. Like, I couldn't help but think that when he's thinking about Ka, he's like, okay, well, can she scribe? This would be really, really helpful for me. And then when he gets in here, back against the wall, almost like Han Solo, you know, where I wouldn't be silhouetted, or like Strider, always putting himself in a tactical advantage.
Right,
sort of
he
position,
has to.
Right?
He's a soldier. That's what he thinks about.
Rock says, Horn Eater Lager, looking hopefully to Ka. It melts our cups. I love that line. It melts our cups.
It's so funny.
Yeah. She says, ale? Ale, Rock says. This thing should be a drink for women, not for large horn eater men. At least, he is not wine.
Yeah.
Kaladin told her to bring whatever. He's barely really paying attention. It was loud in here, obnoxious, smoky, and smelly. But it was alive. With her laughing and boasts, mugs clanking. This was what some people lived for. A day of honest labor followed by an evening at the tavern with friends. This was not so bad a life.
I like that.
Me too.
Yeah.
Sigzil says, it's loud tonight. It's always loud, Rock says. But tonight, maybe more? The army won a plateau run along with Bethab's army, Pete says. Good for them, Kaladin thinks. Dalinar hadn't gone, but Adolin had, along with three other men from Bridge 4. So many people is nice, Rock says. Makes the tavern warmer. It's too cold outside. Too cold, Moash says, but you're from the storming Horneater Peaks. And, Rock says, and those are mountains. It's got to be colder up there than anything down here. Too much air. Hard for you to think. Cold? Horneater Peaks is warm. Wonderfully warm.
There you go.
Really? Kaladin says. It's true, Sigzil says. I like how Sigzil knows so much.
Right.
He can back up all these things.
Yeah,
like, he's really knowledgeable.
He's a scholar, man. He's a world singer. He knows about places and people.
The peaks have hot springs to warm them, he says. Oh, dude, the hot spring argument? Yeah. Oh, my God, this is hilarious.
These are not springs?
But these are not springs, Rock insists. Sigzil's like, this is a lowlander. Sorry, he says, this is a lowlander word. The Horneater oceans are waters of life.
Yeah.
Oceans? Pete asks. Very small oceans, Rock says. One for every peak. Sigzil says, the top of each mountain forms like a kind of a crater, which is filled with a large lake of warm water. The heat is enough to create a pocket of livable land, despite the altitude. Walk too far away from one of the Horneater towns, though, and you'll end up freezing, in freezing temperatures with ice fields left by the high storms. You are telling the story wrong, Rock says. These are facts. They're not a story. Everything is story, Rock says. Yeah. Listen, long ago, the Unkalaki, my people, ones you call horn eaters, did not live in peaks. They lived down where the air was thick and thinking was difficult, but we were hated. But who would hate the horn eaters, Pete says. Everyone, Rock says. As Ka, this gal, brings more drinks. Is the first drink, Lopin, Rock says. You are trying to beat me? I'm at it, Mansha, Lopin says.
Yeah.
Everyone wanted to kill horn eaters. They were frightened of us. Stories say we were too good at fighting, so we were hunted and nearly destroyed. Yeah, but if you're so good at fighting, Moash says, then how come you were nearly destroyed? There are few of us, Rock says, and there are many of you. You are all over down there in lowlands. Man cannot step without finding toes of a Lethe beneath his boot. So the Unkalaki, we were nearly destroyed. But our Tanakai is like a king, but it's more. Went to the gods to plead for help.
I like here how he's this, like, I like Calvin's how he's like, ooh. He's like the king, but more.
But more, yeah.
I like I that. He's extra.
It's so
he's,
good.
He's
eh?
Like your king, but he's more than that.
But he's more than what you say
more
a king.
Than
like,
you,
yeah.
You say king, we say yeah. Tanakai, and he's a
we
king.
We say Tanakai.
I just
it's
like it.
It's like this king.
I like he it would so say, much. Like, it's so funny. Meh. Yeah.
Gods, Kaladin gets interested. You mean Spren? He sought out Syl, looking for Syl, who was perched on a raptor above, watching a couple of insects climb on a post.
Yeah.
Dude, I love it.
She's
Where's
so fun.
Syl? Doing She's something
fun. Super fun.
Innocent. And, yeah. Yeah. Rock says, these are gods, referring to the Spren. Yes, yeah. Some gods, though, they are more powerful than others. The Tanakai, he sought the strongest among them. He went to the gods of the trees. Can you hide us? These men, they hunt us. If you hide here, they will find you and will use you for wood, just like they use us. Use the horn eaters as wood, Sigzil says. Hush, Rock says.
Rock does Next. Not like being challenged at all in his story.
No.
Here. Yeah.
You know. So, yeah. So the, at first they went to the gods of the trees. Can you hide us, says the Tanakai. But the gods of the trees could not hide them.
No.
So he gets refused.
Right.
So next, the Tanakai, he visited the gods of the waters. Can we live in your depths? Give us the power to breathe as fish, and we will serve you beneath the oceans. But alas, the waters could not help. Men dig into our hearts with their hooks and bring forth those we protect. If you were to live here, you would become their meal, so we can't have you live here.
Mm-hmm.
At last, the Tanakai, desperate, visited the most powerful of the gods of the mountains. My people are dying, says the Tanakai. Please, let us live on your slopes and worship you, and let your snows and ice provide our protection. The gods of the mountains thought a long time. You cannot live upon our slopes, they said, for there is no life here. There is place of spirits, not of men. Or this is a place of spirits, not of men.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can find a way to make him a place of men and of spirits, we will protect you. And so Tanakai returned to the gods of the waters and said, give us your water that we may drink and live upon the mountain. And he was promised. Tanakai went to the gods of the trees again and said, give us your fruit and bounty that we may eat and live upon the mountains. And he was promised. And then Tanakai returned to the mountains and said, give us your heat, this thing that is in your heart, that we may live upon your peaks.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing, he pleased the gods of the mountains, who saw that the Unkalaki would work hard. They would not be a burden upon the gods, but would solve problems on their own. And so the gods of the mountains withdrew their peaks. I like this, withdrew their peaks into themselves,
mm-hmm.
is how it's described. I love that. And made open places for waters of life. The oceans were created of gods of the waters. Grass and fruit to give life were had of promise of gods of trees, and heat from the heart of the mountains gave a place that we may live.
Super cool, eh?
Dude, I'm sorry I had to take the time to read it, but
no,
it's
so awesome.
Good. So Moash interjects here. Moash. So the gods were pleased that you solved problems on your own by going to other gods and begging them for help instead?
Yeah.
Hush, says Rock. It's a good story and is truth.
Yeah.
But you did call the lakes up there water, Sigsel says. So they're hot springs, just like I said. Is different, Rock says.
Yeah.
How? Is not just water. Is water of life. It is connection to gods. If Unkalaki swim in it, sometimes they see the place of the gods.
Yeah.
Whoa, let's stop right there.
Okay, so what are you thinking here?
Well, I'm thinking...
What's the place of the gods?
Urithiru. Sorry.
Shadesmar.
The,
Where cities of Spren exist.
Where the cities of Spren exist.
Because he's
right.
saying that
right.
Spren are gods, right?
Right. Yeah, this is crazy, dude.
Yeah.
Kaladin leans forward. I love it. Just when he says that.
Yeah.
That the Unkalaki swim in it. Sometimes they see the place of the gods.
Right.
He leans forward, place of the gods. Yes, Rock says, is where they live. The waters of life. They let you see the place. In it, you commune with the gods, if you're lucky. Kaladin says, is that why you can see Spren? Because you swam in these waters and they did something to you? He's not part of the story.
See,
he grins at...
Cal wants further explanation of this, but he's like, it's not
right.
part of the story. I'm not telling you this.
Right. I find that interesting. Why
well,
he doesn't want to...
Well, I think it's a little bit explained in a little bit when Sigsel talks about if people swim in those lakes that are not Unkalaki, they die.
They
and Sigsel's like, well, actually, if anybody goes in there, you kill them. So
right.
there's a big secret. There's lots of secret stuff going on here. Clearly,
right.
Rock doesn't want to tell his best friends about it. And
right.
two, anybody that goes there and tries to get into these waters get killed. Whether
get
by
killed.
The water
yeah.
because they're not worthy or by the horn eaters because they're trespassing.
Horn eaters who don't
yeah,
want them
exactly.
in there.
Exactly. Whichever way. So there's a big secret here.
Just a small interjection here that after is Rock is like, well, it's not part of the story. So Ka comes over again, filling up drinks and whatnot.
Yeah.
And he says to her, you're a wonderful woman. If you come to the peaks, I will make you family.
So let's
funny.
Use this as a quick little thing here. If she were to come to the peaks, he'd make her family, right?
Yeah, he'd make
and
her family.
And then
yeah.
it says... Little later,
what just
we
pay
just
your
mentioned,
tab, Rock. She says.
Well, we find out that like we just said that you know people who go into the pools are outsiders. Is death to the outsiders because you killed
right,
them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But they're not outsiders if you're made family. So maybe there are
if you're
ways,
made family,
right? Because he's saying he
right.
said that before to them. You
right.
come to the peaks, so I'll make you family. You'll be part of my family. So maybe they won't no longer be outsiders if they're made family. I don't know. There's a lot of information here about Rock's people,
mm-hmm.
and some of it is truth, some of it is myth, and we're not sure which one's which because Sigsel keeps like correcting Rock. And so some of the information Rock's
yeah.
giving us, Sigsel's making us think that maybe it's not true. Do you know what I mean? So it's hard to understand.
Sigsel's trying to keep it real.
Right,
and,
for
and,
sure.
And not have it just be, you know, some kind of abstract, you know, story or legend. He's like, no, these are hot springs. This is how it functions.
But for us as a reader, Sigsel is challenging Rock's story and the validity of it. So that means we might not be seeing the truth that Rock's telling us that, you know, you can be made family, that it's
right.
a place of the gods. Like, there is some mystical stuff happening here, which is really cool.
Well, it says here, so he doesn't want to answer this question. He says, but you can see the Spren, Kaladin says, because of what happened to you in those waters is not part of the story, Rock says. It is involved. I will say no more of this thing.
Right.
Lopin says, well, I'd like to visit and go for a dip myself. Ha! Is death... To one knot of our people, Rock says. I could not let you swim, even if you beat me at drinking tonight.
Right.
Swimming in the emerald pools is death to outsiders, Sigsel, because you execute outsiders who touch them. No, this is not true. Listen to the story. Stop being so boring. Sigsel says, they're just hot springs, Sigsel grumbles, returning to his drink. Rock rolls his eyes. On top is the water. Beneath is not.
Mm-hmm.
Is something else. The water of life. The place of the gods. This thing is true. I have met a god myself. Kaladin says, a god like Syl? Or perhaps a river spren? No, Rock says, I saw Lunu Anaki. Oh, great, Moash says. Wonderful. I like...
Yeah, great. Here's another story.
Like, you're out of your mind. Here comes another. Yeah. You're out of your mind. Rock says, Lunu Anaki is god of travel and mischief. Very powerful god. He came from the depths of the peak ocean from the realm of the gods. Lopin says, what did he look like? Like a person. Maybe Alethi, though skin was lighter. Very angular face. Handsome, perhaps. With white hair. Sigzo looks up sharply. White hair? Yes, Rock says. Not gray like old man, but white. Yet he is a young man. He spoke with me on the shore. He made mockery of my beard, asked what year it was, by a horn-eater calendar. Thought my name was funny. Very powerful god. Were you scared? Lopin asks. No, of course not. Lunu Anaki cannot hurt the man. He's forbidden by other gods. Everyone knows this.
So what do you think about this?
Well, hang on. I think it develops a bit more here. Well, Sigzil, so in the next paragraph, Sigzil looks troubled and had only touched half of his drink, staring at it.
Mm-hmm.
Moash asked him what was wrong, but Sigzil made an excuse just about being tired. Something is there.
Okay, so
Sigzil is very curious about this white-haired god.
Right, so there is... There's very little descriptions of young men with white hair in this series.
Right.
There's one other specific moment I remember this description. And it is in the interlude of the first book called Ishik, the Pure Laker.
Who has the wife that's
who's the lady that works in the tavern, like the knee-high water tavern, and
yeah,
he's like
the
a fisherman.
Yeah.
And these strange men are looking for someone named Hoid, who has white hair, but sometimes dyes it black. I think the quote is
right.
He has traveled several Pure Lake cities looking for someone. Unfortunately, he hasn't heard of this man that they're looking for. He has white hair, clever tongue, arrow-like face, sometimes dyes his hair and wears disguises. The man they're looking for is named Hoid.
Hoid.
And here it says he is maybe Alethi, though skin was lighter, very angular face, handsome with white hair. And then when he says white hair, Sigzil says white hair.
Yeah.
Because he knows someone with white hair too. Remember the connection
right,
here.
Because he knows Hoid.
He knows Hoid. We know Hoid as Wit, but Hoid is his real name. So, I'm not saying that Hoid Wit is Lunu Anaki, but there is only one other time that I can remember at present of anyone on Roshar being described as having white hair.
And not
gray like an old man, but white hair.
Right, white hair.
So, it's really cool.
So, the real question is if that's Hoid, and if Hoid is who the Horn Eater communed with, how did Wit do it? How did Hoid do that?
Well, he did say that, where is it here? That the waters were...
He spoke to me on the shore.
A place of the gods. Yeah, the shore of one of their...
So it wasn't underwater. Okay, I was imagining all this taking place underwater.
No, he came out... Where does it say
this here? Yeah, it's on the shore, yeah.
Place of the gods. I've met a god. Yeah, he says.
Yeah.
He came from the depths of a peak ocean, the realm of the gods. So he came out of the water on one of the peaks.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Very interesting. It's one of the reasons why I brought it up.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. I didn't really think too much about it. I didn't really.
It's my job to point out some things that you may have forgotten about previous chapters.
Well, that's really, really
while
cool.
Also trying to not tell you anything about future chapters. So
right. Well, I appreciate you helping me out with that because that I didn't put that together so quickly.
Yeah.
The white hair. I should have. You know what's awesome about that too with the white hair?
Yeah.
It's like the white rabbit from Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, very much so. And it's also like Steve Martin.
It is a bit like Steve. Well, that's what I'm guessing is it's going to be the father of the bride that ends up
Wit is the father of the bride.
Yeah. Kaladin finally took a sip of his own drink, Lavis Ale, sudsy, faintly sweet. And he's just, I guess he's ruminating here. He's thinking about all the conversations that are taking place about the room. And apparently what's being talked about is how Sadeas keeps disobeying Dalinar.
Mm-hmm.
So Sadeas had apparently been disobeying orders to go on plateau runs.
Right.
He'd gone on one, seized a gem heart, and then tossed it away. Sadeas and Ruthar had gone on another run, one that they weren't supposed to go on, and they claim to have failed in getting the gem hearts, but people think they're just stashing and hiding the winnings.
Right, so the one where he tosses it away as unimportant was the one we read. That was the right. Sadeas POV. This other one is one that's happened off page, where they went,
right.
won the day, but didn't get the gem
heart. Didn't get anything, right. Yeah. These overt slaps in the face were a buzz in the war camps. Kaladin thinks someone needs to put Sadeas down.
Mm-hmm.
He's as bad as Amaram. Tried to get me and mine killed repeatedly. Don't I have a reason, even a right, to return the favor? It's like, again, trying to justify this.
Right.
This is the dangerous part of Kaladin, I find.
Mm-hmm.
Kaladin was learning how to do what the assassin did, how to run up the walls, maybe reach the windows that were thought inaccessible. He could visit Sadeas' camp in the night. Glowing. Violent. Kaladin could bring justice to this world. See, those are the kind of thoughts that remind me of Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Bring that, order that to the galaxy.
Right. His gut told him that there was something wrong with that reasoning, though. And he looks around the room, noticing again how relaxed everyone seemed. This was their life, work, then play. And that was enough for them, but not for him. He needed something more. He got out a glowing sphere, just a diamond ship, and was tossing it around on the table, idly rolling it around. Are you ready? Says Moash. Ready? Kaladin says. Yeah. Meeting in the back room. I saw them come in a bit ago. They'll be waiting. Who? He trails off. But then he thinks.
Oh, yeah, right.
I agreed to meet with these men who tried to kill the king.
Right.
Kaladin's skin went cold and the air suddenly became chill.
Chill.
So that's why you want, yeah, there's the chill again. So that's why you wanted me to come tonight. Yeah, Moash says. I thought you'd figured it out. Come on. Kaladin looks down into his mug, finishes it, and he's gonna go. He needed to know who these men were. His duty demanded it.
Mm-hmm.
Rock acknowledges them leaving, and he was on his sixth drink or seventh. Lopin was only on his third. So much for the drinking con. So it seems like, you know, the Horn Eater's going to win.
Yeah.
I was hoping for this focus thing. I was hoping for a little moment at the end of the chapter. But so tucked away in the back of the tavern was these private dining rooms, this hallway that leads to these private areas. There was a swarthy man lounging outside of one. Could be Pardaes-ish or a Tandalethi. He's got long knives that he keeps on him.
Mm-hmm.
Kaladin, Syl's voice. She says, be careful. But he couldn't see her.
Yeah, she vanished, wondering, apparently, from even his eyes.
Yeah, and had she done that before?
Right.
But really what she says is, Kaladin, be careful, and she's gone.
Yeah.
So in this room, there are three men and a woman drinking at a table, and there's another guard wrapped in a cloak with a sword at his waist, head down, as if he were barely paying attention.
Yeah.
Two of the seated people were light eyes, including the woman. The light-eyed man stood up immediately. He was a little older than Adolin, jet black hair, Alethi hair. He had a nice black shirt on, expensive, an open jacket, embroidered with white vines. Kind of a well-to-do. Adolin would love him.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the famous Kaladin, this man says. Stepping forward, reaching out to clasp Kaladin's hand. I think that's a little presumptuous, don't you think?
Yeah, a little bit. Forcing a handshake?
I just tried to kill your king. I know that you're in charge of the king's protection. And now I'm going to try to, you know, shake your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very presumptuous.
A little cocky, eh?
A little cocky. Storms, he says, but it's a pleasure to meet you. Embarrassing Sadeas while saving the Blackthorn himself. Good show, man. Good show. And you are, Kaladin asks, a patriot. Call me Graves. And are you the Shardbearer? Straight to the point, are you? Graves says. Noting this, there's this mercenary, this I guess this figure that's standing.
Yeah, he's a dark-eyed man with short hair, sunken eyes,
yeah.
wearing heavy leathers and an axe at his side.
Yeah.
It's like hired muscle or something.
Hired muscle, I guess. And the woman is sitting, she sat primly and sipped her cup of wine in two hands.
Mm-hmm.
She was pretty, with pursed lips, wore her hair up, and had metal decorations in it. I recognize you, Kaladin says, one of Dalinar's clerks. She watched him. Danlin is a member of the High Prince's retinue, Grave says. Please, Kaladin, sit. Have some wine.
Oh, it's Danlin. Who's that girl? It's Danlin. It's Adeline's girlfriend.
Adeline's girlfriend.
So here, I'm going to read to you page 221 in my hardcover here. This is Adeline's reasoning. This is a little blurb on what happened, what went wrong between him
what
and
went
Danlin.
Wrong between them?
Yeah. I'm just going to read to you here.
Who's that girl?
It's Danlin. Danlin was still one of his father's scribes, so he saw her on occasion. More glares, but Stormont, that one was not his fault. The things she'd said to her friends. So she was talking and gossiping about the Colins to her friends, and he found out and then ended it. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, like, it kind of makes sense. Yeah. So I just wanted to kind of quote this here because we know that, you know, this isn't just a new character. This is someone that, you know, I bring it up because Teft says to Kaladin, should we worry about this redhead Shallan? She comes in, gets close to the Colins. She could be an assassin.
Right.
When in truth... one's already been placed in the Colin
already
retinue.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The, one of the people who are part of this assassination thing is already been embedded into their, you know, into their
right.
close thing. So I find that really, really cool that, you know, don't worry about Shallan. You should be worrying about Danlin.
I've also been a little suspicious of Teft on that front by, you know, sort of saying, well, let's worry about this red haired gal.
Right.
A little bit. It seems a little like, look over here.
Right.
Right. I don't know. Anyway. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, Danlin, okay, I suppose it was eventual that in you know, meeting new characters that you're going to eventually stumble upon someone Adeline has dated.
Right, at some point. He's dated so many people. One of them is going to want to kill the king at some
throw
point.
Throw a stone. Throw right. a stone. You're going to
yeah,
hit
right.
someone.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So Danlin is here. You're trying to... Calvin sits down and says... but did not pour a drink, and he just simply says, you're trying to kill the king. He is direct, isn't he? Graves asks. Effective too, Moash says. That's why we like him. Graves turned to Kaladin and says, we are patriots. As I said before, patriots of Alethkar, the Alethkar that could be. Patriots who wish to murder the king's ruler. Or the kingdom's ruler. Graves says, very well. We shall be on with it then. Elokar is a supremely bad king. Surely you've noticed this. It's not my place to pass judgment on a king. Oh, please, Graves says. You're telling me you haven't seen the way he acts? Spoiled? Petulant? Paranoid? He squabbles instead of consulting. He makes childish demands instead of leading. He's blowing this kingdom to the ground. Have you any idea the kinds of policies he put into place before Dalinar got him under control? Danlin asks. I spent the last 3 years in Kolinar helping the clerks there sort through the mess he made of the royal codes. There was a time when he'd sign practically anything into law if he was cajoled the right way. He
this gets
is
back
incompetent.
To, this gets back a little bit to Moash's story, right?
Right.
Of the king helping out one of his friends, which is a rival silversmith to Moash's family. So... he would have signed anything if it was, you know...
he would have signed anything, yeah. He gets all good men killed. Lets that bastard Sadeas get away with high treason. At least I was comforted by that
right.
amongst this group, that they at least recognized that Sadeas had committed high treason.
Right.
So that... like, so I was kind of like standoffish with this group, and I still am.
Mm-hmm.
But at least I'm comforted by that.
Yeah, it seems like they're on Dalinar's side. They seem to really like Dalinar.
They do.
The problem, though, is that, and it's going to come up
ahead.
Here in a couple of paragraphs, is that they don't necessarily want our Dalinar on the throne. They want
the Black Thorn.
The tyrant, right. The guy who created and used an iron fist to mold Alethkar into what it is,
right.
Through warmongering. Right. They don't like diplomatic right. Way of Kings codes, Dalinar. They want the Black Thorn back.
They want and the that's Black Thorn. Problematic. Yeah.
So you say, oh, let that bastard Sadeus get away with high treason. That's a good right. Thing. That's great. Yeah, we don't like Sadeus either. So, you know, and, an enemy even, of my enemy kind
even
of thing.
We could agree. We could also agree with the incompetence of Elikar.
Yes, of course. Of course.
We can agree
That's
with that.
That's actually my question. I don't want to do this kind of in the middle of here, but what do you think about all this? Yeah. Do you think they have a point?
Well, I think that, okay, I will say this. The thing that might be my highlight for this whole chapter is what's about to come when Graves puts it to Kaladin. Be the surgeon here.
Right. Using the surgery
Don't
metaphor.
Let the entire body go down. It'd be just because the hand has gangrene.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Dude, I think this is the most amazing thing that Brandon Mr. Sanderson has put forth in this chapter. This is amazing.
Yeah.
What a great way. And it basically stops Kaladin short.
Right. He starts thinking
when
about
he
it.
Thinks when he Oh yeah. He's really I think he genuinely thought about it. I think that Kaladin is still in place, and I'm very surprised, which we'll talk about in a
yeah,
bit.
Yeah.
But
okay.
So what do I think? Ugh, dude, I'm thinking all kinds of things. It's really complicated.
Right.
You know, if you love your kingdom, you have an idea about what it should be. You're very disgruntled with Elikar. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Do you just watch it happen? Do you become this so-called patriot and try to take it over? I don't think killing people is the way to go in trying to, you know, get things done. However, when things get really bad, or if things get really, really bad, what can you do?
Right.
Like, I don't think it's quite there yet with Elikar personally, but they certainly do.
Right. Well, the mercenary says it. He puts it to him. He says, if a king is destroying his country, is it not the duty of the people to remove him?
Right. Yeah, that comes up in a minute here, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He's incompetent, gets men killed, bastards at Sadeus get away with treason, mm-hmm. So you try to assassinate him? Yes. Yeah, it's not the duty, and it says duty, and that's a word that I think resonates with Kaladin,
right,
too.
Right, for sure.
Right?
And then Moash puts a really good question to him here. He says, if he were removed, what would happen? Ask yourself, what would happen? And then it's Kaladin now who takes says, over the narrative and says, actually, you know what? Yeah.
Dalinar would probably take the throne.
Yeah.
Elikar had a son back in Kolinar who was only a child, a few years old, maybe. So if Dalinar, even if Dalinar only proclaimed himself a regent, he would still rule.
Right.
The kingdom would be far better off with him at the head, Graves says. He practically rules the place anyway, Kaladin says. So Kaladin, again, reinforcing.
He's agreeing with that statement. That's an agreeing statement there. Yeah, he practically rules the place anyways.
No, says Danlin. Dalinar holds himself back. He knows he should take the throne, but hesitates out of love for his dead brother. The other high princes interpret this as weakness.
Right. Which is super true, because the Alethi see anything as weakness, really.
Right. We need the Black Thorn, Graves says. This kingdom is going to fall otherwise. The death of Elikar would spur Dalinar to action. We would get back the man we had 20 years ago, the man who unified the High Princes in the first place.
This is that statement I'm talking about here. They don't want current Dalinar. They want the Black Thorn.
They want, right. Even if that man didn't fully return the mercenary at, so the mercenary speaks up here.
Yeah.
We certainly wouldn't be worse off than we are now. So yes, Graves says to Kaladin, we're assassins, murderers, or would-be ones. We don't want a coup and we don't want to kill innocent guards. We just want the king removed, quietly, preferably in an accident. So currently they're not guilty of killing any guards at this moment,
no,
are they?
No, they're not.
So they just set up the accident and the accident failed.
Seems like they were the ones behind the cracked gemstones inside the shard plate and the cut rail at his palace.
And the cut rail, yeah.
So they're trying to make it look like an accident. They don't want any collateral damage. They don't want to hurt anybody else.
No.
But that still doesn't make
that. So that's also another.
That still doesn't make it right, but still.
Well, no. Of course, they're squaring the circle big time. Unfortunately, we have not been particularly effective so far, says Danlin. And that's why I wanted to meet with you, Graves says. You expect me to help you, Kaladin says. Think about what I've just said. That's all I ask. Think about the king's actions. Watch him. And ask yourself, how much longer will the kingdom last with this man at its head? Danlin says the Blackthorn must take the throne. It will happen eventually. We want to help him along, for his own good. Spare him the difficult decision.
I like that. That resonates with me a little bit, because
what I feel
eventually he's going to see, Dalinar is going to see that the king is incompetent, and he's just going to take the throne for himself, and we want to spare him that difficult decision of having to take the throne as opposed to just getting it. You know what
right.
I mean? Yeah.
It sounds a little sinister to me too, like her saying that, like, he must take it. It will happen eventually.
Like they know more than what they're leading.
Yeah, yeah. Like I, as a first time reader, I can't help but you know, sort of throw into
it
that.
It definitely,
like,
drips of that for sure.
Yeah, it will happen eventually. Like what? Like the emergence of the Blackthorn is like a, you know, like
foretold,
or it's just like it's like a, you know, like a werewolf that's inside, just ready to burst out.
Yeah. Well, we have seen that. We technically have seen that on the battlefield where the Blackthorn takes
over.
Yeah,
it's like some monster. Yeah, exactly. I could turn you in, says Kaladin. Inviting me here was a risk. Moash says you were trained as a surgeon, Graves says. Yes. And what do you do if the hand is festering, threatening the entire body? Do you wait and hope it gets better? Or do you act? Kaladin didn't reply.
Right.
That's my favorite moment right there.
It's kind of
shitty. I love
that
so much.
I feel kind of shitty about it because it means that Moash has told these people enough information about Kaladin
so that
they could use that against Kaladin to make...
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it feels like a breach of trust. I mean, trying to kill the king is already a breach of trust, but... Their friendship is supposed to maybe be beyond that kind of thing. And telling these complete strangers some of your friend's background and secrets feels really offside to me. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I am shocked at Kaladin's ultimate way he handles this.
Mm-hmm.
You control the King's Guard for now, Kaladin, says Graves. We will need an opening, a time... when no guards will be hurt to strike. We didn't want the actual blood of the king on our hands, wanted to make this seem like an accident, but I have realized that this is cowardly. I will do the deed myself. All I want is an opening, and Alethkar's suffering will be over. Danlin says, it will be better for the king this way. He is dying a slow death on that throne, like a drowning man far from land. Best to be done with it quickly. Kaladin stands up. Moash rises hesitantly beside him. I will consider, Kaladin says. Good, good, Graves says. You can get back to us through Moash. Be the surgeon this kingdom needs. Again, preying upon that with Kaladin, right?
Yeah.
Come on, Kaladin says to Moash. The others will be wondering where we got to. I'm so surprised how suddenly this ends.
Yeah.
In the text. They walk out following, saying their... following after making a few hasty farewells.
Kaladin honestly expected them to try to stop him. He can't believe that they let him go.
They let him go. Storms, he thought, I wish their arguments hadn't been so good.
Yeah.
How did you meet them? Kaladin asks Moash. Rill. That's the fellow who was sitting at the table. He was a mercenary of some of the caravans I worked for before ending up in the bridge crews. He came to me once. We were free of slavery. They're right. You know they are, Cal. I can see it in you. They are traitors, Kaladin says. I want nothing to do with them. You said you'd consider. I said that. So that they'd let me leave. We have a duty, Moash. Is it greater than the duty to the country itself? You don't care about the country, Kaladin snapped. You just want to... pursue your grudge.
Yeah, Moash is trying to spin it here into like a greater good type thing, and Moash doesn't give a
again,
fuck
using,
about
again,
greater
using.
Good. Yeah.
All right, fine, but Kaladin, did you notice? Graves treats all men the same, regardless of eye color. He doesn't care that we're dark-eyed. He married a dark-eyed woman. Really? Kaladin asks. Yeah, Moash says. One of his sons is even a one-eye. Graves doesn't give a storm about what other people think of him. He does what is right. And in this case, it's... There were some people surrounding them now. It's what he said. Someone has to do it. Don't speak of this to me again, Kaladin says, pulling his arm free and walking back towards the table. And don't meet with them anymore. He sat back down, Moash slinking into his place. I like the word here, slinking, like a snake.
Like a slinky, I think.
Or like a slinky.
He's it just like
goes
doing...
downstairs. Goes downstairs. Yeah. What's the little jingle?
Repairs. Okay. Yeah. It's slinky.
We don't know.
It's slinky.
Moash slinks into place, annoyed. Kaladin tried to get himself to rejoin the conversation with the others, with Rock and Lopin, but he just couldn't. All around him, people laughed or shouted, enjoying this good life, right? Mm-hmm. Be the surgeon this kingdom needs. And the last line of this chapter is storms. What a mess.
Right.
And so it's like, true. It's messy.
Give me your like little wrap-up thoughts
okay,
on this
so
whole
thing. So here's my
wrap-up
shock. I'm shocked. I am shocked. There were so many little tangents that I was, you know, throwing in my head with this chapter. Like, I thought Kaladin was going to slay them. I thought,
right,
just his duty is going to take over. He's going to, you know, injure them to be incapacitated and then arrest them, have them all taken in.
Yeah.
I was surprised that when he left, so I'm surprised that he didn't do something about it, because I personally feel that even though there was a shard bearer there. And by the way, the shard bearer, do we get that conclusion as to who it was?
We assume that it's Graves, because he says, I'll do it myself.
I'll do it myself. Yeah, maybe.
So we're, okay. we have to assume it, the one guy had an axe with him.
Yeah, so the mercenary.
And Graves' weapon wasn't showing. So I assume it's right. Graves.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought Kaladin would have emerged victorious over those characters, you know, the swarthy man who's the guard, the people sitting down, all of them. I thought that and I didn't think Moash would try to stop him. If Kaladin had started something, I didn't see Moash joining in necessarily against Kaladin.
Right.
So I thought, that's it. And then he would take Moash under arrest. And then I thought when he walks away from this, I thought, well, he's taking Moash in. He's going to arrest Moash right now.
Mm-hmm. But he doesn't.
But he didn't. Right. And I'm very surprised by this. And you know what voice I really want to hear? What does Syl think about this?
Right.
I really was missing that at the end of this chapter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure we'll get that at some point.
I'm hoping we get it. Yeah.
This is a really, really tough call. Your best friend has gotten himself mixed into something
right.
in over his head. Do you blame him? Probably not. He's had a friggin' shit life. Do you try to save him from it? Yeah, I guess maybe you try. I mean, would you try to save me
but
from something?
What a risk.
Yeah, for sure.
Because if you let Moash continue as is, then there's going to be more attempts. And who knows? They then want this version of Dalinar. Like, their ambitions are very specific.
Right.
And I find that to be very insidious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely more than what they're saying going on. Or at least it feels that way. You know,
yeah.
the information they have. The part I really, really hate about this, like I said earlier, is that it seems that Moash has given them information about Kaladin that they're using against him. And I find that really bad. That's almost worse betrayal than trying to kill the king, to be honest.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is. Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. It's a betrayal to Kaladin himself. It's a betrayal to what they're doing. They're supposed to be guarding
the king.
Right? How are you supposed to rise above being a bridgeman and being a wretch and then taking on a responsibility and then not seeing it through?
Right.
Like, yeah, Elokar is bad, but is he that bad? You know, he's basically an incompetent and maybe isn't necessarily bringing an end to the war. He's not maybe the leader that they need, but I don't know. But again, as Kaladin says, I wish that they hadn't made such a good argument.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I feel very conflicted after this.
It's a tough one,
dude.
It's a really tough part of the book, for sure. Because you're like, these characters you've learned to love, and now they're doing something that's against your own like sensibilities and stuff. It's
right,
you know.
Well, and think of it like this: what happens? And I'm going to say this. I'm going to say this as a prediction.
Okay.
What happens when Adolin and Dalinar and Renarin find out about this with Kaladin? What is going to be the result when they find? And I'm going to. It's going to come out. Like, Kaladin is playing with fire. He's going to try to what? Suppress this somehow? Save Moash? Turn him? How?
Well, your thoughts are before this chapter were that maybe he would try to stop it from the inside. He was only taking the meeting to try to figure out who it was and then try to take them down,
yeah,
kind of thing. Because if he tries to take them down in the open, then they'll see him coming. So this is a sneaky way of trying to do that. But that doesn't seem like the Cal's doing here.
No, it's like a double risk. It's already a risk to meet with them. That alone, I don't even think that alone Dalinar would tolerate.
No.
Dalinar would not tolerate or entertain the assassination of his nephew.
No, he would never. He would never.
Never. So Kaladin, I'm sorry, Kaladin's dug himself I don't want to say a grave, but he's committed something here that I don't think he I don't think he's thinking this through, unless in the next few chapters, if he rectifies this in a way that he wants to do, like, for instance, he puts together a group of soldiers to go up against them so that they're, you know, they're overwhelmed. He takes them all out. He takes Moash into, if that happens, then okay.
Right.
But if that doesn't happen, then Kaladin is playing with crazy fire.
Oh, for sure he is. For sure. It's,
yeah.
This is really, really risky. It could literally mean the disbanding of everything that he's worked for. You know, the Dalinar's protections are the only thing that's keeping Bridge 4 alive and all these other bridge crews alive. You know, if this goes south, it could mean not just for Kaladin himself, for all these bridgemen, it could mean they're being displaced and then there won't be anyone to protect them from Sadeas. So there's a lot riding on all this.
It's very great chapter.
It's a great chapter.
Highlight the surgeon. Be the surgeon. This conflicting point of view, like this perspective, you know, this way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Like, be the surgeon. Wow. Remove what's festering.
Yeah.
That for me, that's a very interesting perspective.
That's cool.
And I think it leads down a dark path. It's not the honorable way to go.
Be careful, Kaladin. That's what Syl says.
Right. Anakin, I'm telling you, it's not.
If Anakin only had a spren, maybe.
Well, I think Ahsoka was his spren.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing.
She just wasn't
Ahsoka
there at the
was
end.
That,
right?
She just, yeah.
Those last, still, we should do a pod someday about those last four episodes of Clone Wars. Those are some of the best episodes I've ever seen.
We might want a pod in the future about Star Wars.
Yeah, we've been asked a couple times. My highlight, I think I said earlier my highlight was the Lopin cousins, but I think that now that we've covered the whole man with the white hair is Luna Anunnaki or whatever.
That's a big reveal.
I like that because we had in the last chapter, we had a moment where we think there was a character who could have been Whit Hoyd,
right,
show up in Shallan's chapter. So he's not in here, but keeps popping up, and I and whether or not this white-haired spren god from the horn eater peaks is Hoyd Whit, I just like this mysteriousness in these chapters where it makes us think, it makes us talk about it. I just love it so much. It's so great.
Yeah.
So we have a pretty quick info dump today.
Info dump.
Info dump. The Onery Chull is the bar that they go to. It doesn't sell Horneater lager because it melts their cups. And Moash says that it melts teeth, which is hilarious. If you think about
melting
taking a sip of
teeth.
Something and then there's you know, when you eat coffee, you get like yellow stained on your teeth. Well, this
melts it. When you eat coffee?
When you drink.
I don't normally eat.
Yeah, you know, crisp. when you drink coffee, It like, you know, stains your teeth and stuff, but this, the Hornady Lager literally just melts the patina or the whatever off of your,
melts the patina right out of there.
Bye
bye patina.
And then the Schutte is Flandria, which is meat. It's the meaty kind of meat. They use fried bread. They take the Flandria, they put it in little balls, mix it with ground lavis, and they batter it up and fry it. I mean, literally, this chapter didn't have very much info dump. I'm literally just covering what we have already talked about.
Yeah,
and then,
we did.
Rock eats one with Kremlin claws, which make it crunchy. So there's not really much else to talk about in this one. If we had...
Kremlin crunch.
If Kaladin had been with Sigzil when Sigzil had gotten all that information from one of the criers, we might have had more to talk about info dump wise, because it would have been more info there, but there really isn't.
Yeah.
That's the end of the episode. We are covering 47 and 48 next chapter, our next episode. So we're back to two.
Yeah.
So we were three in a row of ones, and now we're back to two. And then after that, it'll be another one, another episode of one chapter, because it's such a huge chapter again. So this this part three here is kind of a mixed bag of stuff. So so 47 and 48, if you're reading along. If you want to be part of all the fun, I would suggest going to patreon.com/heroesof, where you can sign up for the Patreon team. First off, I want to say a big thanks to Michael Kioski, who is a new patron. He has signed up for the Skymark tier, which allows him to lets him be part of the Discord and all kinds of different things. He gets the bonus episodes, early access. Right now, we have just created something new on the Discord. Werewolf Will has started up this thing called Movie Club, where once a month we are going to vote on a movie to watch. The whole group is going to watch a movie, and then we'll get together one night and just discuss and to talk about the movie, like just have a roundtable discussion, which is, you know, really cool. We kind of had an impromptu roundtable discussion a couple of weeks ago.
I think it was last Saturday,
actually, and it was so fun that it kind of spurred us to keep doing this on a monthly basis. So, yeah, it's fun. So if you want to be part of the fun, go to patreon.com/heroesof and learn more. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofacathra@gmail.com. You'll find that in the show notes. You can always hit us up on Twitter at heroesofone or on Instagram at thestormpod. So that's it for the show, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We're about halfway through part three here. I'm super excited to get through this part because the Sanderlanch is quickly approaching and I cannot wait. The very end of this part, part three, is... I think mainly what everyone's waiting for you to read is the very end of this part.
Really?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people waiting for you to read the end of this part.
So not even events in part four and five.
The end of the book is amazing. Yeah, the end of the book is amazing. But there's some stuff that happens at the end of this part three that I think everyone's kind of waiting for you to read. So,
oh boy. Okay.
There is. I'll give you a little a little taste of something here. There is a live read coming up in this part, so we are going to be having fun with that.
Oh,
so look forward to that.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, so thanks a lot, everyone, for listening. We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes Of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Acathra.